The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with the Titans. Gone so long, we'd forgotten how good they were, but not anymore. Let's talk Tennessee right off the top. Plus, the embarrassing disgrace that is the New York Jets managed to reduce the most productive player of all time to absolutely nothing. I may have a comment or two. And then, one of the best players in baseball has lost it at the worst possible time. How does that happen? And is it all over anyway? Answers to those and other questions as we get up with you starting right now, live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Heineken. Greeny, Graziano here, and the football crew is standing by and ready to go. Let's see him. Ryan Clark is here this morning. Dominique Foxworth is here this morning. Desmond Howard is here this morning. They're talking about the game of the night, Titans and Bills. Titans' first game in 16 days. First Tuesday NFL game in 10 years. First quarter, no score. Third and four, Bills at their own 26. Josh Allen, back to throw. It's tipped. It's picked. That's Malcolm Butler taking it back to the 16, setting up great field position for the Titans a minute and a half into the game, and they would take advantage. Two plays later, second and 11. Ryan Tannehill, he's missed A.J. Brown. Out since week one with a bruised knee, making his presence felt, corner in the end zone. Titans up 7-0. Ensuing Bills drive, third and 15. Josh Allen, so good in these situations, running to his left, finding his man. Look at the catch by Andre Roberts on the sideline. Take another look. Keeping the drive alive with the spectacular play. And two plays later, they cash it in. Second and one. Oh, the league loves the flip now. The little flip is the most popular play in the sport. That's Isaiah McKenzie on the touchdown. We're tied at 7. 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. If you're squeamish, avert your eyes. This is Derrick Henry. That is Josh Norman. I don't know where to begin. By the way, there were offsetting penalties on this play, so it didn't count, but it mattered. Look at that. What Derrick Henry does to Josh Norman is just not fair. And we will certainly... Dominique Foxworth can't even look. Derrick Henry, unbelievable. Meanwhile, 22 seconds left in the half. Titans up by 4, first and goal at the 10. Tannehill, touchdown. Goes down awkwardly, but he would get up laughing. Titans up 21-10 at halftime. On we go. Third quarter, still 21-10. Bills in Titan territory, second and 4. It's Allen again. It's picked again by Malcolm Butler. Again, he's going back. Cole Beasley is going to tackle him. Actually, Cole Beasley is going to do nothing of the kind. Butler is still up. He's going to bring it back 68 yards to the 12-yard line. Two picks for Butler on the day. Allen, 26 of 41, 263 yards, two touchdowns, and the two INTs. But the Titans have their chance. And four plays later, first and goal from the floor. It's Tannehill. It's Jonnu Smith. Touchdown, Tannehill. 21 of 28. Four total scores. Titans up 28-10. Fourth quarter, 28-16. Looking to close the door. No one does that better than King Henry. In he goes. 19 carries, 57 yards, two touchdowns. Titans win. A statement win in their return. Tennessee still unbeaten in the AFC.
It was a great energy in the locker room. I think guys were excited to go out and play. You know, it's been a long couple of weeks, ups and downs. We're playing, we're not playing. We're practicing, we're not practicing. Zoom, okay. In the building, out of the building. You know, it's just been a roller coaster in every which way.
They need to adjust the shot on the Zoom, but outside of that, they were outstanding. Since week 7 of last season, when Tannehill took over, the Titans have been flat out great. They're 11-3. Fourth best in the sport. They score 30 points a game thanks to an offense that's best in the league in red zone efficiency at 85%. The league average is 59%. And so let's talk about these Tennessee Titans, and the football crew is here, as promised. Dominique is here, Ryan Clark, and Desmond Howard. RC, out of all the things that happened last night, what was your number one takeaway?
I'm still wondering if Josh Norman has stopped barrel rolling on the ground after that stiff arm from Derrick Henry. Listen, we watched Derrick Henry turn Earl Thomas, one of the greatest safeties in this last era, into a lead blocker in the playoffs. And then Josh Norman runs up there, and he's doing his best. He's trying to slap the stiff arm down. He's trying to get the ball out. And then the long arm of the law, the arm that Derrick Henry has been saying is doing a lot of curls, obviously has been doing a lot of triceps and shoulders as well, because you don't do this to grown men who have families to take care of. And Josh Norman is just back on the second week. He punched the ball out last week on Darren Waller for the Las Vegas Raiders, and I guess he figured, let's try it again. This is just a bigger man. And I know that Dominique's on this show, and Dominique's played corner, and he understands what it's like to be in these very precarious positions. But what you don't do is run up there with your chest out, because you end up running back to the car like Debo stole your chain, and your grandma gave you that chain.
I hated to see it happen to a corner, but I do not understand what it's like to experience that, because never was I trying to do that. I strictly followed the Cobra Kai rules when I was playing. You strike first and you strike hard. I'm not trying to slap the ball out of me. I'm trying to slap stiff arms down. I'm going 300 miles an hour at your knees. You know who you never been stiff armed by? A knee. I'm running right through them cats. Because that ain't going to happen to me. You can watch all the film from my history from the time I was 6 to the time I retired. Nobody never got me like that, because I wasn't coming up there with my chest out thinking I could slap a stiff arm down or I could poke the ball loose. No. My job is to cover people and to get the guy on the ground. I'm not causing no turnovers right there. I'm taking your knees, all of them. Patella, ACL, MCL, everything. I'm not going to stand up there going like this. I'm going to slap the ball. I'm going to slap y'all. No. None of that. It hurts to see. I'm upset with Josh Norman expose himself like that, but it ain't gonna happen to me.
Okay, fair enough. You told us earlier.
Hey, RC and Dominique, what did the five fingers say to the face?
Slap.
Slap. Man, he stiff-armed Josh Norman to another stratosphere. And Deke, I'm with you. I'm thinking the same thing, brother. You have to go to the knees. All of that is waist and below. You don't mess with that grown man up top like that, because he will embarrass you.
Josh Norman out there taking charge
to see Josh Norman get stiff-armed like that. Crazy.
I will repeat, this play was called back because of offsetting penalties. It actually didn't count, but it is still the most memorable moment of a night that actually has a lot of other significant things to say about it. Ryan Clark, we went into this night talking about, are the Buffalo Bills one of the big boys in the AFC? Do we come out of it saying, are the Titans good enough to play with anybody?
Yeah, we got to stop treating the Titans like they aren't doing what they're doing, like they aren't putting the film out that says we're 11-3 with Ryan Tannehill as a starter. We were 2-1 in the playoffs and made it to the AFC Championship. This team was 6-for-6 in the red zone last night, and that's not just kicking field goals. They were 6-for-6 with touchdowns, and that's amazing to do. That's amazing efficiency, and Mike Vrabel has this team playing in a way that works for them. They're going to be physical in the run game. The quarterback's going to make great decisions with both his arms and his legs, and they're going to play tough physical defense. You have to love what they're doing. You have to say to yourself, you know what, no matter how it looks, this team is a contender in the AFC, and all they do is continue to win. They beat a team that we were touting as a contender after going through a COVID scare and a COVID crisis, and you have to commend their ability to compartmentalize and then come out and play a great game.
They only had 3 practices in the last 16 days. And then they go out there and they put a whooping on a Buffalo Bills team that we like a lot. Very quickly, though, Dominique, you were telling me before the show, you actually came out of this game more impressed with Josh Allen rather than less. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all the games that they've lost since Josh Allen have been there, most of them have been because Josh Allen made mistakes. And many of the games that they won up until this season were because the defense was playing really well. I feel like last night, Josh Allen wasn't the problem. He threw one bad interception and one interception that was kind of not his fault. But down by a bunch of points, they know you need to pass. He made some incredible throws. I frankly left that game more impressed with Josh Allen than I have been in quite some time, even despite the fact that he's got off to such a great start this season. He didn't make the stupid kind of risky YOLO plays that sometimes he makes where he's lateraling the ball and doing that stuff. He played within himself, and he made some outstanding passes that few quarterbacks in this league can make.
All right, so let me get on to some other stuff here. Dez, I'll come back to you on that game a little bit later, but I want to get to some other news out there, because the fallout continues from Dak Prescott's devastating ankle injury on Sunday, which will, of course, sideline him for the rest of the season. Yesterday, during his weekly radio appearance, the owner of the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, was asked what impact the injury might have on contract negotiations with Dak this offseason. Here's what Jerry said.
You've got to be reminded that to have a team, we've got to really manage how we dole out our resources. Dak is deserving of anything you want to put on a piece of paper. If you evaluate what he can do to help us win championships, you can see that it's there, and plus he's the premier leader. We've got to make it work. So what am I saying? I'm saying exactly the same thing that I said the last time we were asked about this. Before the season started. It's a part of the game, is the business and the contract part.
So that was a lot of words. Dominique, let me come to you. As the resident president of the Dak Prescott fan club, when I saw that happen, you were one of the first people I thought of. I haven't had a chance to talk to you since. What was your reaction? What is your primary thought on Dak today?
I mean, obviously it goes to him as a person and as a player, and we learned a bit about some of the mental health struggles he had in the offseason. So my mind goes there, first of all, and I hope that he's getting through this all right. It was really tough to see him in the immediate moment right after. It wasn't the tears that got to me. It was him kind of grabbing at his ankle and seemingly trying to fix it in the moment, and that desperation hurt. But as far as his future with the Cowboys is concerned, he has done everything that he could to put the pressure on himself, to kind of bet on himself. And it's just ironic that we're now in a situation where it's really not up to him anymore. It's kind of up to Andy Dalton how much he gets paid. And I know Dak's going to be rooting for his team and rooting for Andy Dalton to do well, but Dak's agent, he's going to be rooting for Andy to throw some interceptions, because that's the best advertisement for how important and how valuable Dak is if this team struggles offensively without him.
Dez, what are your thoughts and what are your expectations for the Cowboys going forward now without Prescott?
Yeah, I agree with Neek that, you know, my first thoughts were of Dak and, you know, everything that he's gone through, the type of person he is. He bet on himself playing under the franchise tag. You know, I've been covering him since he was at Mississippi State. Such an outstanding young man. You know, think about everything he's going through, losing his mom when he was in college, and then recently losing his brother, coming out and talking about, you know, his mental health struggles. And just a guy who's worked extremely hard to put himself in this position. He's quite frankly, guys, one of those players you just want to root for, and to see him go through that was, you know, is quite sad and devastating. But can I please address Jerry Jones' statement right quick? Because
sure.
I don't know, you know, well, this is Cultural Wednesday, and I know you guys are familiar with In Living Color, and there used to be
absolutely.
A skit with Damon Wayans, and he played a man who was in prison who used a dictionary to extend his vocabulary, learned a bunch of big words.
Yeah.
But at the end of him trying to explain stuff, he said absolutely nothing with Jerry Jones. Same vibe. Same vibe.
Just straight thesaurus.
I saw that in the notes yesterday. I didn't know we'd get it in, but very well done. Okay, we'll leave that there for the moment, because there's another football story, and this one is of some interest to me. The New York Jets' rocky relationship with Le'Veon Bell came to an abrupt end yesterday when the team announced it had released the 28-year-old running back. He will officially become a free agent today at 4 o'clock Eastern. And to say the least, he has not been the return on investment the Jets were looking for. His Jets' scrimmage yards per game was down nearly 50 from his days in Pittsburgh. He never had a 100-yard game. His return on investment was met for him. They paid him $28 million for 17 games. With the team. Let me bring, I don't envy Dan Graziano being the one who has to sit next to me during this conversation. Dan, why did this happen? Why did yesterday the New York Jets release Le'Veon Bell?
You say rocky relationship, and it was from the start, right? The coach, Adam Gase, who came in the same year, never really seemed to embrace Le'Veon Bell as the key part of his offense, and Le'Veon was used to being that in Pittsburgh, so had some issues with how he was used. You showed he wasn't very productive, and he comes off an injury this week, doesn't play as much as he wants to Sunday, and so he expresses disappointment to the front office. They have a conversation. They decide it's probably best to move on. They spend a couple days trying to trade him. Nobody's going to trade for his contract, so they end up releasing him. He'll be released at 4 p.m. Eastern today, and he'll be free to sign with any other team. And, yes, that chapter in Jets history comes to a quick close.
Is there a likely place for him to wind up? Is that what should we be looking for?
All you hear really is speculation, because the trade market didn't materialize. So now that he's free, does Chicago, you know, which is down Tariq Cohen, take a look? You know, they're trying to make a run. Does Miami, who needs somebody, you know, maybe a veteran presence, Jordan Howard hasn't worked out. The Eagles were poking around on Devontae Freeman, some other running backs. So that's just putting two and two together. We'll hopefully find out here in the next couple days.
My money says keep an eye on New England. The Patriots.
Always,
no one buys low better than Bill Belichick. Keep an eye on that. Meanwhile, let me bring Dominique and RC into the conversation here. Let's take the Bell side of this. I'll do the Jets part of it a little bit later. But RC, is he a player who can make a difference for someone? Can someone pick up Le'Veon Bell right now, who is a contender, and can he be the piece that puts them over the top?
They have to be a contender, and he has to be a piece to put them over the top. And what he learned is just because you play for the Jets doesn't mean that you're going to soar. And what I mean by that is sometimes you start to smell yourself a little bit. You start to think that it's all about you. You don't realize what the organization, what the head coach, what the quarterback, what the offensive line and the weapons around you can do for you. But if you go to a contender that has some of those pieces, Le'Veon Bell can still be fit in and moved around in a running back by committee type situation where he could do versatile things. So it's going to be a huge decision for him and a huge decision for a contending team if that marriage will work.
Real quick, Nate, your thoughts, Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I agree with everything RC said, but you think back to the playoffs last year, Ingram for the Ravens got hurt, and that really hurt their playoff chances. Everybody is kind of running back by committee these days, so I'm not sure where he ends up, but he's absolutely still valuable. He doesn't have to be an every down back like he was at the peak of his career. He's going to be a valuable guy that any playoff team could use, and you're right about thinking about New England, because they can offer more than just money, and they can offer a chance at a Super Bowl, and the teams that can do that, I think, are the teams that are most attractive to Le'Veon Bell.
All right, so we'll leave that there for the moment. Again, I will share my thoughts on how this thing played out in our second hour today. Meanwhile, let's get to the baseball yesterday. Postseason baseball. We got the Braves and the Dodgers game two. Clayton Kershaw, a late scratch with back spasm. So Tony Gonsolin is doing the pitching last night and not well. That's Freddie Freeman, who crushes one to right. Freeman's second home run of the series. Braves take a 2-0 lead. Top of nine we go now. Braves up 7-3. This is Ozzie Albies. Now, bear in mind, you might have seen this the other day. He hit a home run into the bullpen, and Mark Melanson caught it without even moving in the bullpen. Well, for the second consecutive day, he has caught a home run in the bullpen. He caught that one the other night. Now he catches this one on this night, and now it looks like this one is going to be a lapper, but it's not. Bottom of nine. Dodgers down 8-4, runner at second, and that is Mac Muncy. He smacks one. The Dodgers cut the lead to 8-6. Melanson now comes in to pitch. He's facing Cody Bellinger with a runner on. Bellinger crashes one to right field. That one's going all the way to the wall. Will Smith is on his horse. He's going to score. Bellinger's at third, so the Dodgers have the tying run 90 feet away. A.J. Pollock comes to the plate. Here's your moment. Hits it hard, but right at Austin Riley, who makes the play, and the Braves hold on. They win it by a score of 8-7. They are up 2-0 in this National League Championship Series. And let me bring Eduardo Perez in to the conversation this morning. Eddie, the Braves, 2-0 now, and Freddie Freeman is such a big part of the reason why. What has made him so good?
Oh, he's so good because he uses the entire field, and he uses his knowledge within the game to make adjustments. And that's one thing that Freddie Freeman has been able to do the entire time he's been in the big leagues. And Chipper Jones helped him out in a big way when he was a young player. Look, if you're gonna go change a split finger fastball away, and he saw four of them in his first at bat, you better not come with it on a 3-2 pitch, because he knows that's your out pitch. And if you're going to come with it, you better hit your spot, because if you don't, Freddie Freeman will let you know. This time, the split finger pitch, instead of being away like it was when he struck him out the first at bat, was inside. He's able to keep it fair. Again, exit velocity of 108.9 miles per hour off the bat, 27 degree launch angle, 100% hit probability. That's what Freddie Freeman does. He makes you pay in a big way. And right there, he'll remember that. He'll put it in the back pocket. And now Tony Gonsolin will also.
And the Dodgers right now with their backs up against the wall. We'll preview game three in our next hour. Meanwhile, the other game last night in the American League, game three, Rays Astros. Rays up 2-0. Bottom of one, Jose Altuve at the plate. Been struggling in the field, but he gets that one. Takes the high pitch out to left, his second home run of the series. So the Astros get what they need. They get the early lead. Sixth inning now, a runner on for Brandon Lowe. Lowe will ground this to second, and Altuve, he has just lost the ability to throw the ball. This happens every now and again in baseball. It's impossible to explain. He had zero throwing errors for the entire regular season. This is his fourth of the postseason. He's devastated. The Rays are threatening later in the inning. The bases are juiced for Joey Wendell, who brings the juicer, sends it to left. Two runs will score. Rays take a 2-1 lead. Later in the inning, 3-1 is the score. Hunter Renfroe is at the plate. The bases are loaded again. Renfro, right field. That's going to get down. Falls for a hit. Two runs will score. That's all they'd need. Rays, 5-2 is the final. They have a 3-0 series lead. And so back to Eduardo Perez I go. The Rays have the Astros very much on the ropes here. What has been the biggest difference in this series, Eduardo, so far?
Defense. Defense has been the biggest thing, not only in the infield, but yesterday we saw the outfield. We saw Kiermaier do a fantastic job in center field, 20% catch probability. They go out there, they make plays. They can go back on plays, and then when Kiermaier comes out of the game with a hand contusion, here comes Hunter Renfro in the outfield, and he then now puts his show on display. Let's not forget, that was his home ballpark last year, and for the few years before that, he had great jumps on it. Defense playing major, no errors so far for the San Diego Padres through these first three games, and they're letting the Houston Astros know about how to play perfect defense there. I said Padres, I mean Rays, because we're in San Diego.
The Rays, of course, who take the 3-0 lead, and on the other side, Altuve struggling. We'll talk about that in our next hour. Eddie, thank you. Meanwhile, we'll take a break. Coming up, so much more here on Get Up. For the first time since this, the Browns and Steelers meet this weekend. What are they saying? What should we expect from this rivalry? Plus, how did last night's game change Ryan Clark's often duplicated but never replicated power rankings? You'll find out who he has number one as we continue. Let's Get Up on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Geico. Happy Geico-ween. You could save even more by bundling home and car insurance. All right, it's our favorite game. It's Sneaky Hembo versus Dan Graziano. And here's the question, Dan. Who has the Titans record for most games with multiple rushing touchdowns? Hembo is ready to go. They go face-to-face next. Get Up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and at the risk of putting extra pressure on Dan Graziano, I think you're going to get this right. Who owns the Titans record for most games with multiple rushing touchdowns?
So I checked with Hembo before he pulled that weird, like, creepy walking move he did right before the break. I said, does this count the Oilers, the Houston Oilers? He said, yes. So I'm going to guess Eddie George. I think Eddie George is the answer here.
That's not right. It's Earl Campbell.
Yeah.
It is the
that
one.
That was my second guess. Actually, was my second guess.
You're Eddie George is close.
But, yeah.
Eddie George had 13 such games. Earl Campbell, 17 such games. Derrick Henry, after last night, has 10
such games. My other guess was Chris Johnson.
But I tell you what, neither of his touchdowns was the one play from last night you're going to remember. Titans, Bills, if you're just joining us, let me take you through the unique moments of a unique Tuesday night game. This was in the first quarter after a turnover. The Titans would cash in with Ryan Tannehill hitting A.J. Brown for an early touchdown. So it's 7-0 Tennessee. Then here's the play. This, I don't even know what to say. That's Josh Norman. Oh, and down he goes. Derrick Henry with one of the most memorable plays of the NFL season. It, by the way, was called back because of offsetting penalties, but it was still the most memorable moment of the night. 22 seconds left in the half. Titans are up by 4. First and goal from the 10. Tannehill. He was responsible for 4 touchdowns last night, including that one. That's an awkward landing for him, but thankfully he's okay. Titans up 21-10 at halftime. Third quarter, more from Tannehill. This is Jonnu Smith. Bear in mind, Tennessee only had 3 practices over the last 16 days with all of the COVID issues that they've had, and they came out and played great last night. Here's one of the 2 Derrick Henry touchdowns we were talking about. Titans go on to win it by a score of 42-16. They improved to 4-0 on the season, and that is a statement win over the Bills last night. Meanwhile, looking ahead to one of the really big games this weekend, Sunday will mark the first time the Steelers take the field against Myles Garrett since this incident of last year. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin was asked about his messaging to the team in advance of this rematch.
There really is no message. My day-to-day existence kind of relays that message that you suggested. There's a lot on the table in reference to this game in terms of stakes. They're a 4-1 team. We're trying to remain undefeated. We're not looking for that low-hanging fruit or that reality TV storylines and so forth. This is a big game here in 2020.
Well, of that, there is no question. And so, Ryan Clark, my resident Steeler, I want to start with you. How much of a storyline in this game do you believe the Myles Garrett of it all is?
I believe it's a non-story. I believe it's a non-story to football players, but outside of the people who actually are going to be on the grass, they're going to make it something because we like the drama. We like the reality show that sometimes is football. But if you're Mike Tomlin, you're telling your team, you know what? We can't focus on Myles Garrett, who got in a fight last year. We got to focus on the 2020 Myles Garrett that's in the MVP conversation, that's going to be the defensive player of the year. And if you're Kevin Stefanski, you tell Myles, you have to leave that where it was. Now, you also have to protect yourself because there may be some guys on the other side that still remember that, that still come at you a little extra, but you can't retaliate. The biggest part about this is Mason Rudolph is exactly where he needs to be, on the sideline, not on the field. And for that reason, I don't think this would be a big deal in what's going to be a very important game in the AFC North.
And Dan Graziano, I mean, obviously, this is a circumstance the Browns have moved past, right?
Yes.
And the deal got taken care of this offseason. This is something they've moved beyond.
Yes, he served his punishment. He came back. The Browns have maintained all along that they believe he'll recover from it, learn from it, be fine. They extended his contract in a massive way, so they put their money where their mouth was on that. And what we've seen so far from Myles Garrett this year is, as RC just said, an MVP quality performance. He looks like his head's in the right place. He's not getting penalized as much as he was early last year when he was getting in trouble for unnecessary roughness. So, I hope that RC is right, and I think we have reason to believe that it should be a non-story during the game.
Which then, Dominique, enables us to talk about this game, which is actually an incredibly important one. We think we know how good the Steelers are. We're not quite sure we know how good the Browns are. Is this Sunday a measuring stick game in your mind for Cleveland?
It absolutely is. I think they lost that first game of the year for the Ravens, and many of us were like, oh, same old Browns, just like they were last year. A lot of talent, a lot of hype, but they don't live up to it. And then they ripped off a few wins against teams that we're not quite sure about. Some of them we know are bad, and some we're not quite sure about. Now we have the Steelers, a team that we know has a very good defense and tons of weapons on offense in their divisional opponent. If the Browns come out of this with a win, the rest of the country will be looking at them as perennial, but they'll be looking at them as a lock for the playoffs and a team that could really make a run in the AFC, which I'm not sure that we thought them, that we're going to think about them that way until they beat a big dog like the Ravens or like the Steelers.
Now, RC, you were a Steeler. I'm old enough to remember a time when this was a great rivalry. Pittsburgh and Cleveland is supposed to be a great rivalry. It hasn't been for basically two decades because the Browns have been so bad. How big a game is this for Pittsburgh on Sunday?
Say it again. I'm sorry. Would you say Greeny?
How big a game is this for the Steelers? We know it's a measuring stick for the Browns. How important is this game for the Steelers?
It's a huge game for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Pittsburgh Steelers are 4-0, but I still don't believe that they've played at high of a level on defense as they thought they should have this season or were thinking they could have. And now you look at the Browns coming in playing explosive offense in the run game, obviously having talented wide receivers on the outside, and Baker Mayfield at quarterback. So I think for the Pittsburgh Steelers, this is also a litmus test. This is also saying, you know what, we're not only 4-0, but we're contenders in the entire AFC, not just this division. And I believe that's the way that Mike Tomlin is looking at it. I also believe that's the way that this team is looking at it. And one thing Dom said all offseason about this defense was they lived on turnovers. I expect them to take a step back. They haven't gotten those turnovers. Minkah Fitzpatrick hasn't been as good. This would be a great time for him to start.
All right, it is one of the several really good games on the schedule this weekend, and we'll continue to look forward to them. Meanwhile, let's get to the power rankings here, because ESPN releases its own weekly NFL power rankings, and for this upcoming week, a shift at the top. Seattle is number one. According to our group, the Packers are behind them. The Chiefs, with their first loss, have slipped from number one down to number three. But the power rankings I look forward to every week come from my friend Ryan Clark. RC, in your mind, who are the five best teams in the NFL?
At number five, guess who has stiff-armed their way into my power rankings for the first time ever? It's the Tennessee Titans. And listen, I was trying to keep them out. Even when I was on the phone last night, I was like, well, if the Bills win, they'll be five. But they're not. They're the Ravens. And then Derrick Henry said, knock, knock, knock. Let me bowl you over, RC. Make sure that we're number five. And I'm actually kind of excited about it. This team is 11-3 with Ryan Tannehill at the helm. They went to the AFC Championship last year, yet we still disrespect them. And I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to run up and try to slap the ball out. I'm not going to try to slap the stiff arm down. I'm just going to accept them, bring them into my family. The Tennessee Titans are number five. And at number four, here we go, Steelers. Here we go. Chase Claypool. Ever heard of him? Maybe not, because he's from Canada. And now they must play great football there because he is a superstar. He stepped up as a number one against the Philadelphia Eagles, which has allowed Juju Smith-Schuster to slide in number two, where he excels. T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree, Cam Hayward still playing excellent football up front, and Big Ben is healthy, and they have one of the greatest coaches of this era in Mike Tomlin. Excited to see what they do next week. Now, here's where it gets a little tricky and where people may disagree. But at number three, I'm going with the Seattle Seahawks. ORC, the Seattle Seahawks are undefeated. They're so good. Russell's not just looking for a vote. He wants the whole thing. I hear all that. But when I watch him, I'm like, okay, can a team with a defense this bad, this dependent on a quarterback, go all the way? Maybe they can. But they aren't the best team. They aren't scaring people. If the Minnesota Vikings get 6 inches, or if the Minnesota Vikings maybe just kick a field goal, we are talking about a loss for the Seattle Seahawks. I need to see more. And at number two, I'm sticking with Kansas City. One, because of the dude that plays quarterback. Yeah, I don't care. He threw a little pick into some piles of people because he was trying to come back, but he made plays all day. There were plays taken off of the board that were touchdowns, that were huge plays that helped the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Las Vegas Raiders. They kind of slip in October every now and then. They get a little bored. The defense gave up some big plays, but Tyrann Mathieu said that they will learn from that and they will be better. And I believe it. And when your quarterback is not from this earth playing earthlings, that's how you win games anyway. I expect them to be better this week against the Bills. And at number one, the Green Bay Packers. Guess what? Know what part of this is? Me and Aaron Rodgers shared a moment yesterday on the Pat McAfee show. Maybe it wasn't the moment I would have liked to share it, but he did acknowledge a little bit of what happened. He just saw it in his way. But this dude is playing at the top of his game right now. If I had to pick an MVP, it would be Aaron Rodgers. He is absolutely flawless. We have the Smiths rushing on defense. Jair Alexander is stepping up and showing us that he's not only a true number one, but he is an all-pro caliber player. And Matt LaFleur is calling plays at a level that Dan Orlowski would salivate to telestrate and touchscreen. And when you can do all those things, you get to be number one on RC's power rankings.
All right, it's really well done. Let me bring Dominique into the conversation on that thought. By the way, Aaron Rodgers against Tom Brady this Sunday, only the third time they've ever met in their career. So that should be great. But Neek, how about the Chiefs being at number two? They've not looked great. Frankly, they've had one great game all year long, and it was a Monday night game against Baltimore. Do you believe they're the second best team in the NFL?
I mean, I think that's a fair place to put them. Salivate to telestrate. I just wanted to reiterate that was magical rhyming. Are you freestyling now? I do think that the Chiefs, they've earned our respect. Like, I mean, they've been dominant in this league for quite some time. Just because they dropped one game, I don't think it's time for us to jump off of that bandwagon necessarily. I do think one of the most concerning things is when Patrick Mahomes scrambles, that is when he is most dangerous. We talk a lot about Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy scheming up great plays. Patrick Mahomes really makes incredible plays when he kind of buys time and then launches the ball downfield. The Raiders were able to take that away from him to some degree. If that's something that future teams can copy and emulate, then I think the Chiefs are someone we should be worried about. But until that happens, I think they've earned our respect and we owe them that.
Dez, Packers at one, Chiefs at two, Seahawks at three. What do you think?
I tell you what, you know, RC, you did a great job, but you will have to rank, I would think, the Chiefs at number one, not number two, because of Mahomes at the quarterback position. I think, now, I love Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is one of my favorite players of all time. And what he's doing in Green Bay is fantastic. But I don't know if it can be sustained. Even when they get Devontae back, Devontae Adams, he's a weapon, but he doesn't have the weapons that Mahomes has. So at this point, I still like the Chiefs at number one, with the Packers at a close number two. And all that rhetoric from RC, the only player that he ever quoted out of that whole thing was Tyrann Mathieu, the guy who just happens to be a Bayou Bengal, just like RC. I don't know if y'all picked up on that, but I did.
All right, we will take a break on that thought. Much more to do as we continue. I just mentioned it. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, they will walk into the Hall of Fame. But for this weekend, which one do you have more faith in? We'll answer that question and more next. Get Up on ESPN.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that.
price
That's
come.
A clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
Your next question.
Next question.
Amazing team.
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Here we go. I'm going to ask Dominique Foxworth a series of hard-hitting questions, and whether he wants to or not, he's going to have to answer them. And here we go. We start with Green Bay and Tampa this weekend. Future Hall of Fame quarterbacks going head-to-head. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Which one do you have more confidence to play huge this weekend?
Oh, yeah, it's not an easy question, but I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers. The way that he's been playing so far this season, even despite the fact that he doesn't have the same amount of weapons as Tom Brady, I'm leaning on Aaron Rodgers. And Tom Brady, all his weapons are not healthy necessarily. Godwin's still out, and I think Mike Evans is questionable right now. They lost O.J. Howard for the year, and Gronk is not the Gronk of old. So I suspect that Aaron Rodgers is going to do his thing, and Tom Brady's going to continue to struggle.
Only the third time those two guys have ever met in their long NFL careers. Next, the 49ers blown out by the Dolphins last weekend. They benched Jimmy G. Will San Francisco make the playoffs this year? Yes or no, Neek?
No, they are certainly suffering from a lot of devastating injuries after their two trips to New York, and they're suffering a bit from a Super Bowl hangover, it would appear, and their schedule is not getting any easier. I think that with their quarterback hobbled, playing poorly, this team is not going to make the playoffs this year. So I in that division also, you put on top of it the fact that no one's talking about the Rams, but the Rams are playing exceptionally well. Obviously, the Seahawks are undefeated right now in Arizona. Is getting better. That's a tough division for them.
What a fall off that would be, and there could be some questions about the quarterback going forward. Meanwhile, speaking of questions about quarterbacks, in Atlanta, the owner, Arthur Blank, did not fully commit to Matt Ryan earlier this week after they fired the coach and the GM. Dominique, is this Matt Ryan's last season in Atlanta?
I think it might be, and you mentioned the,
not
the
might
troubles.
Be. Yes or no?
Okay. Yes, you're right. I was getting away from being straightforward with my answers. Good job, Mike Greenberg. Yes, it's his last season in Arizona, and next year will be his first season in San Francisco. Obviously, he has a relationship with Kyle Shanahan. That was Matt Ryan's best season in his career back when he was an MVP. And the 49ers are not committed to Garoppolo going forward. There's just about $2.8 million worth of dead money on his contract next year. I think that we could see Matt Ryan out west and the Falcons trying to rebuild around the draft picks that they get for that trade.
Not only did I like that, but out of the corner of my eye, I saw Graziano start nodding his head over here when the insider is nodding along. You like the sound of that. Can we get his mic on here? You like the sound of that, maybe, Matt Ryan, to San
Francisco. Very, very intelligent breakdown of the situation, because as we've talked about many times on this show, it's a year-to-year commitment with the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo contractually, and Matt Ryan doesn't make a whole lot more money than Jimmy G does. Makes a lot of sense.
Like it. All right, Dominique, that's really well done. Well played. We'll come back. Put a bookmark in that one. I want to come back to it. But right now, I want to get to this, because this is the first game of the century that we have in this college football season. This weekend, number 3, Georgia. Number 2, Alabama. Georgia in Tuscaloosa for the first time since an overtime win in 2007. Alabama's won each of the 5 meetings since. Nick Saban, 21-0 at Alabama against his former assistants. But Kirby Smart has had fourth quarter leads against Saban in 2 different occasions, and both his losses were by single digits. Alabama, meanwhile, has won 79 games against teams ranked in the AP top 10. That's tied for the second most in poll history. With a win here, they would tie Notre Dame for the most. So what's at stake this weekend between these two? Well, frankly, absolutely everything. You take a look here. According to our analytics, this on paper is one of the best games in recent memory. Alabama and Georgia representing the first time in the 16 years of our analytics efficiency rankings that the top teams entering the game on offense and defense have met in the regular season. The 3 previous were all in the national championship game. So that's how good this game is. And Desmond Howard, of course, one of the stars of College Game Day. This is one of these games that we live for. Des, how do you see this? What is the most important thing fans should be looking forward to in this game this weekend?
Look at Alabama's offense. You got to look at their quarterback, Mac Jones. He's playing at a high level, but he has so much talent around him. Guys, we look like, okay, Jerry Judy's out. Henry Ruggs III is out at receiver. But then you have Devontae Smith. He can blow the lid off a defense, stretches defenses vertically. And then Jaylen Waddle. He's Mr. Everything. This young man averages 20 yards per catch. And then they got another guy, sophomore named John Metchie III, who's also contributing. So they got three receivers that they can hit you with. And I have you mentioned the running back, Najee Harris. So you got to look at Alabama's offense against Georgia's defense. That's going to be an incredible matchup. Watch the secondary, though, of Georgia. See if they can hold up against Alabama's passing game. The crazy part, Alabama averages 51 points a game, number one in the conference.
Yeah, look, it is really your classic matchup of the irresistible force and the immovable object. And, RC, we were talking before the show. I mean, Alabama has become wide receiver U. It is unbelievable the players they get through there.
Man, it's really become a thing where they are getting the top-notch guys, developing them, and then they go on in the league and play well, whether it's Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Calvin Ridley, and now you look at last year's draft with Ruggs and Judy in the first round. I think everyone's expecting Waddle and Devontae Smith this year, Metchie next year, for Nick Saban to be able to go into households of the high school kids and lay his rings on the table, but also say, if you come and play this position, not only will you ball, win a national championship, but you'll be a first-round draft pick. I'm going to tell you what it makes me think, though, Greeny. After watching my LSU Tigers against Missouri and watching Missouri put up 546 yards when they couldn't score more than 14 points a game before last week, I think to myself, will we, the LSU Tigers, be able to keep Alabama under the century mark? And I think if we hold them to 99, I will feel good about that. I understand how this works now. When you behave the way that I behaved on Get Up every Wednesday morning last year, when you buy custom purple clothing, and when you act a complete fool and smoke cigars on TV with one of your best friends, Marcus Spears, maybe you deserve this. But I don't deserve 100. I don't believe that. Just as Josh Norman did nothing to deserve the way that Derrick Henry treated him last night, I don't deserve for the Louisiana State University football Tigers to play defense this way. Ed Orgeron said he's going to fix it. I hope to high heaven he fixes it before we see these three wide receivers from Alabama. Because if so, I'm not going to watch the game. Did you hear what that man said? What Desmond Howard, Heisman Trophy winner, Super Bowl MVP said? Them boys averaged 51 points a game, and the Missouri Tigers put up 45 on us. I'm not watching if we don't get no better.
I get it. So, RC, your defense probably can't stop him, but very quickly, Des, can Georgia's defense stop him? Can Georgia's defense shut down Alabama? I got 30 seconds.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Yeah, Georgia's defense will be able to put some pressure on Mac Jones. I think they'll take away the running game out the gate, make sure that Najee Harris doesn't get loose. But then late in the game, I think it's going to be too much pressure for Georgia's defense. You got Alabama's offense will figure it out. Steve Sarkisian is a very brilliant offensive play caller. He will figure it out in the second half, and they will hit some bombs, and then they will take care of Georgia. But it's going to be a great matchup for at least 3.5 quarters.
It is unquestionably the first monster game of this college season, and we will see it this weekend, Georgia-Alabama. Meanwhile, more SEC for you is coming up on Saturday. Number 10, Florida, hosting LSU in the Swamp. That's Saturday, 3:30 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app as the SEC is back and, as usual, better than ever. Coming up here, despite being forced to practice virtually for the past 2 weeks, the Titans showed last night why they are a Super Bowl contender. How convinced are you going to be? We'll show you as we continue. Let's get up on ESPN.